and here we go with episode 114 of We Talk Comics. Tonight, we're defining independent comics. With me, as always, is my cohort, Keith. Say hi, Keith.
Hi, glad to be here tonight.
And we have the royal honor. We have the editor-in-chief, the owner of Assailant Comics, the writer of such books as Binary Code and How I Discovered Them, Heart of Black. I keep wanting to say Heart in Black.
Neither one of those was right.
Black of Heart. Ah!
There you go.
Black of Heart and Binary Gray, which I read seconds ago, and that's a really great first issue.
Oh, yeah. I like the noir stuff better, but that is a really unique superhero power you've picked out there. That's a really unique ticket twist. I really like that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and of course, you've got a couple of other books just coming out. So why don't you give us your little pitch there before we do the news?
Oh, okay. The third issue of Black of Heart just came out, which is doing really well. Our new series is called Open Tree, Legends and Tall Tales, and the idea of it is basically a series of one-shots, a different artist team on each book, and a different vibe for each book, and sort of the theme is just kind of love stories. So the first issue is a supernatural western, which I think just itself kind of stands on its own. The second issue is going to be a straight-up tall tale, rhyming narration and dialogue, the whole nine yards. And I'm actually working on the third issue now, which is a little more along the lines of some of the other work that I've done with Assailant, which is sort of a it's going to be sort of a love on the run, sort of a Tarantino-style, gritty, bloody type of story, which is kind of, you can say love theme, and that can mean just a whole spectrum of things, which is kind of what I liked about it.
Different artists on each story?
Yep, absolutely. Totally different art styles. So if you've seen the Open Tree stuff that I've been posting on Facebook and on the Assailant site, you can see what the style is. It's sort of realistic, but the colors are beautiful, and it's a very Western style to it, And then the second book is a lot lighter. It's going to be all watercolor. It's a totally, totally different vibe. And it's sort of just been an outlet for me to play with different genres, and kind of feed that need in me, basically, to write different types of stories, and not just be pigeonholed to one type of thing. So,
well, I actually was surprised. I was reading on your site that this book is different than the rest of your stuff, but every book you do is so different than the others. I mean, you've got Sleepless that is, it's different than anything else. You got a noir comic, you got a superhero comic. I don't know why you'd qualify this anthology any different than the others.
That's true. I mean, that's, for me personally, just as a writer, I think, every time I try to take on a new story, whether it's short or like a mini series, I really want to do something different with it. And even in the case where I've done the same type of story, I just finished a piece over the winter called The Weight of Air, and it's another murder mystery type story along the lines of Black of Heart, but it's set in present day Hollywood, and a totally different vibe with it. I'm writing a sci-fi story now. It's very different. It's very abstract. It's not like anything else that I've written. And part of that, I think, is just to keep me interested, but also, I'm essentially creating a portfolio for anyone who cares to read my stuff,
Well, and you got some celebrity fans, actually. How, friend of the show. You were hanging out with him last month, I hear. Robert Venditti, nicest guy in comics.
Absolutely.
He was nice enough to do a couple specials with us. We're huge fans of his here. Probably the best up-and-comer, if you can call him up-and-comer anymore. I mean, his work for DC is just huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I just had to mention that. I thought it was so cool that you're hanging out.
He's awesome. He sent me a tweet. I met him in Lexington, he read the first two issues of Black of Heart and really liked them, and sent me a tweet about how much he liked it, and it was awesome. Charles Soule sent me a tweet about Black of Heart. That book, for whatever reason, seems to be really taken off, so I'm obviously very thankful for that.
Well, I'm sure we'll talk about this more, but we got to pay some bills. That means we have to do the news with Cub Reporter K, sponsored by Comicosity, the best comic site on the net. No movie stuff. It's just your comics. Check them out. Plus, you know what? They've got the hang, and you know that's a great video podcast. Just the girls over there do an awesome job. Keith, any news for us?
Yeah, I've got a little news. I will say, looking for some news on the newly revamped Comicosity.com. Such a slick new design to the website. Love going through it. Super easy to find everything, including some big crazy announcements. We were a bit disappointed when Justice League Unlimited came out and did not have a Canada variant cover. We are getting one for Death of Wolverine. Death of Wolverine 1-4 will have Canada variant covers. All that have the Canadian flag in the background. Quite surprising. This will hit the shelves right after Fan Expo in Toronto, which kind of makes me think that if you're at Fan Expo in Toronto, you may be able to get your hands on this thing a couple days early. This is the Charles Soule, Steve McNiven book, miniseries that's coming out in September weekly. And we'll be, you know, the final death of Wolverine. And, you know, it's sad to see this character will never appear again.
you know what? Sorry, go ahead. I was all ready to say, you know, Wolverine Canada exclusive cover, who cares? Then you say Charles Soule, and I go, oh, yeah, I have to buy a Wolverine book.
The covers are pretty nice. They're a nice design.
Oh, yeah, but it's Wolverine, man. I'm not falling for that again.
I'm not the biggest fan, but there's some pretty images that you could take a look at all four on Comicosity right now. As I like to say, you can have any variant cover you want without hunting by visiting google.com and clicking images. That's how digital readers get their variant covers.
Anything else, Keith?
Yeah, I got a couple more things. A bunch of DC stuff. So let's do this all at once. DC looks like they're going into a pretty major reshuffle of stuff in October, once they come out of the big crossover event, or I shouldn't say crossover, the specials month, Futures End month. We're getting a new creative team on Green Arrow. Kreisberg and Sokolowski, who are the producers of the Arrow TV show, are taking over as writers. Daniel Samper who's been doing Batgirl and Pandora, is taking over as artist. No word on where Lemire's going, but Lemire and Sorrentino are wrapping up the story they had been working on, so it's a graceful exit. In October, we're also getting Marguerite Bennett will be taking over as co-writer of Earth 2, with Andy Smith taking over as artist. Nicola Scott is wrapping up her her time at DC, actually. She said she has one more project she's working on for DC, and then she's heading off to do Creator Owned. As
yep,
well.
The big one, right?
I got two more. I've got actually three more things. Oh. There's so much happening in October. We're just about to get solicits for October. Clarion the Witch Boy will be debuting in October, which is probably the most surprising debut, number one, coming. I actually missed this in the news. I don't know how. Anna Senti, not one of my favorite writers. I'm not sure I'm going to be lining up. Trevor McCarthy on art, though. I do quite like Trevor McCarthy. Sci-fi, horror, and mysticism.
Can the Bulleteer be far behind?
Other Chris, who's your favorite DC character, obscure DC character who hasn't gotten a new book lately?
Oh, man. I don't know. I hate to say that. If I really had the option, I would really like to do like a Man-Bat story. I've always been a really big fan of Man-Bat, and I know, I guess he was sort of in the part of the Forever Evil thing, but I don't know. That's my answer.
Yeah,
take it or leave it.
He turned up to me. What was it? It was the Batman 27, like ridiculously quadruple sized special that he was in. I think was the other thing, only other spot he's appeared in New 52. Not that character came up just a few weeks on the show ago on the show as who do I call Chris 1 and Chris 2?
I'm unimportant.
You can just call me Charlton. Everybody calls me Charlton anyway.
Okay. Well, there's a name with some. With some comic book cred right there, Charles.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yes, I was going to ask eventually whether Steve Ditko was a nice guy and whether they actually printed those comics at a cereal factory. But
yeah, they printed them at my house. No, that didn't happen.
And they did cereal boxes during the day. It was a busy
day. Yeah, exactly.
Now, Keith, didn't Riley Rassimo, our friend of the show, on here all the time, didn't he also say that he wanted to do a Man-Bat story? We could have a connection here.
Man-Bat is one of those characters. There is no iconic Man-Bat story.
Exactly my point.
It is open.
There should be. He deserves his own story.
There's so many, super duper, like, you can make, you, there's literally whole books of greatest Joker stories. And, picking out, like, three, these are the classic Man-Bat stories.
Right.
Like, I don't even know you can get one of those 100 pagers out of Man-Bat.
I'm a huge, like, Scarecrow is my favorite, like, easily. But Scarecrow's been done. And you're absolutely right. I haven't read a really kick-ass, amazing, you know, blow your socks off Man-Bat story.
I've always thought as Man-Bat was an, they were artist-driven stories. Neil Adams created Man-Bat. I didn't think as a writer you'd be all that interested in the character. He's visual. He's not a particularly compelling character.
Yeah, I agree. Well, the same thing for Venom, right? I mean, and they totally revamped the character with the new book, and I think the same thing could be done for Man-Bat. There's definitely more depth there than what's been seen so far.
So one of Bruce Wayne's high school friends becomes the new Man-Bat. It's interesting. I like that angle. I'm a big fan of Agent Venom, so. My favorite.
Well, they got that new book that could launch it out of the junior Bruce Wayne book.
It's like boy bat at that point. Same as man boy bat. Young man bat.
Young man bat. Teen bat. Or tween bat.
Little man bat.
You mean like, L-I-L?
Well, you could get a whole Twilight thing going on Man Bat, actually. That's not like good. Something.
There is one big announcement that Gail Simone is leaving Batgirl.
Yes.
We are getting Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher and art by Babs Tarr. So we are getting, with issue 35, which is the October issue again, we're getting not only a new creative team, not only a new artist, but a redesigned Batgirl. We are going a very, very different direction as Barbara Gordon goes off to grad school.
I don't know how they're going to fit this into the regular story. It seems to me like I saw the little pinup they had out, and quite frankly, it kind of looks like, Earth 2 Batgirl. But, yeah, no, but change is good. Change is good.
Yeah. It's interesting that they're doing it in the, in the middle of the book, like a redesign like that. But, like you said, change is good. We'll see what happens.
The only thing I can think they're redesigning to give the editors sort of an excuse for getting rid of Gail Simone. Because last time she was walking away from the book, there was huge outcry.
Yeah, right. No, I'm a huge fan of Gail's work on the book so far. I think it's been amazing, but I don't know. A redesign in the middle of it seems strange to me.
I think one of the interesting things, I like the new design, actually. It certainly separates the character from the other Bat characters, which has been something that they've done bit by bit since Death of the Family, really.
Right.
But I do think it's good to take this kind of 90-degree turn with the book when you've got someone as high profile as Gail Simone leaving it. The idea that someone's going to pick up and do the next part of the Gail Simone story, that seems like too big a shadow to me.
Is that it for news, Keith?
I got one last bit. It's not DC. This is an announcement from Boom Studios. And Boom is announcing that friend of the show, Michael Morici, will be writing the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes comic book. This is starting in the fall, and it's a 6-issue series that will bridge the gap between Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. And I'm super excited for that movie. Planet of the Apes is my all-time favorite film franchise, even beating out Star Wars. And Michael's a great guy. He'll be on the show in the next few weeks to talk about. Well, I've invited him on to do a fanboy film review of Planet of the Apes, actually, even before this was announced. But so really look forward to finding out what he gets to play with for this film tie-in.
Yeah, definitely invite me in on that one. I'm seeing that one opening weekend.
Mm-hmm. I'm arranging my whole weekend around seeing this. I love this movie. I love Planet of the Apes.
I was really surprised how much I liked the last movie. I guess I went into it not sure what to expect, but it was pretty awesome. So I'm definitely looking forward to the new one.
So, and is that the news?
And that's the news.
Yay! I love the news. All right.
I love the way it ends.
All right. Now, in the past, we've always defined creators, at least I have, ever since basically the Turtles Black and White Revolution in the 80s. For the last 40 years, I've always sort of defined there are independent creators and there's creators that work for the mainstream, Marvel and DC, the big two. And I was going through my Comicsology app, and I realized I am now buying more Monkey Brain, more Oni, than I am the big two. And I just wanted your guys' opinion on, is independent still really a thing? The numbers on the Marvel, lower tier Marvel and DC books aren't as high as they were at one time, and independents are more prevalent, are more out there. I mean, even an Image book, a smaller tier Image book, is kind of independent in my view. What is independent to you guys? Now, I asked Chris on the show because, I mean, I supported his Kickstarter. He sort of defines what indie is to me. He has his own little, not little, but he has his own publishing company. And can we still draw those lines? What do you guys think?
Well, no, it's definitely what I'm doing is little, for sure. It really has become sort of a gray area, I think. I mean, I guess I wouldn't, you know, I would love to have a book with Image or Boom or someone who's not, you know, the big two. And I'm not quite there yet, but I'm hoping to be soon. But yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, I guess it's hard to explain, and it's sort of a longer story than I would like it to be, unfortunately. But I mean, you have like this sort of this overflow of people who are starting to look at comics for the first time, I think because of Walking Dead and because of the Avengers movie, and you get these people who are like, oh, okay, this is going on over here, and I think the people that are really hardcore comics and have been hardcore comics for a while are starting to expand out beyond that and realize that it's not just good storytelling, but...
All right, we had a little hiccup there. I've just gotten a text from our friend Chris, co-host Chris, who has a power outage at his home. And that is why he cannot get back onto Skype. So we're gonna talk for a couple of minutes here and just see if maybe he can switch to his iPad. I don't know. So you were just starting to talk about. So Chris had asked about independent, and you were starting to talk about kind of small press independent. I think like where you're at.
Yep. I think I was saying. Basically, I think comics. Kind of level the playing field to that extent. I mean, you know, I think the option is there. So the people who are really into stories are going to look for good stories. It doesn't matter really who the publisher is. That's just been my experience anyway.
Well, that was funny. I was talking to someone just a couple of days ago about what I'm calling the flattening of the market. You know, people always look at that top 10 and, you know, the top book is selling, depending on the month, it's selling... Maybe it's 300,000 for a super gimmicky one. Maybe it's 125 for kind of your regular month of Batman. But when you look at that number 300 on the list, that number keeps climbing up. Like you go back 5 years, that number 300 was, maybe it was like 1500 copies. Now that number is looking more like 2000, 2500.
Right.
You see those, you know, the kind of like self-published, the Terry Moore, that kind of stuff. That number's ticking up as it goes.
Right. Part of it could be also that, I mean, for me personally, you know, I follow writers. So if a writer that maybe I fell in love with on a DC or Marvel book does the creator-owned thing with Boom or with Image, then, you know, I'm more apt to follow that writer or artist or whatever. And that seems to be happening a lot more lately too. So, I mean, that, I don't know. I don't know if that's a factor or not, you know.
Certainly something, I mean, Brubaker said that when he left Marvel, was that the model that he's seeing now is You start independent until the big two will hire you. You work for the big two until fans know your name well enough that you can go back to creator-owned and sell enough books to make your living.
Absolutely.
So it's really like that path has changed so much. And Image has changed so much of that. I mean, that was how Image started, was exactly that. You know, a bunch of people who felt they were star names without being Spider-Man or X-Force artists, and they could do whatever and people would go buy their books.
Yep. No, I totally agree. I definitely think there's been a shift there. For me personally, the same thing. You know, I have literally pages of, you know, my own story ideas. Doesn't mean I wouldn't love to, like we were saying earlier, write a Man-Bat story or a Wonder Woman story or whatever. I would be more than happy to, because I'd like to write. And you know, bottom line is, if I can make my living writing, that's a win for me, you know. But ultimately, I think if you're really in love with writing or art or whatever the case is, to have that control is kind of the bottom line. And so if you can go and make your name doing a Marvel or DC book and then have the option to pitch to these other publishers, why not do that? You've got a built-in audience if you've managed to, you know, to captivate them. And, you know, if you're doing your job well, then the audience is going to follow you.
Well, and to illustrate what I was saying there about the numbers, I just want to read. I just pulled up quickly from Comics Chronicles, which is a website that keeps track of sales numbers of Diamond books. 2004, top book, 209,000. May 2009, 94,000 copies for the number one book. May of this year, 147,000. So obviously some recovery over the past few years. But then if you go to the number 300 book, number 300 in 2004, 945 copies.
Wow.
Number 300 in 2009, 2,500 copies.
Wow.
And now here in May 2014, 4,700 copies.
Wow.
For the number 300 book. And the number of comics coming out has grown a bit, but it's grown a fairly large amount, but that's still, really a growing market should be pushing that number further away, because all of your Marvels and DCs will be so much higher than that.
Right.
Like Marvel and DC are publishing about the same as they did a few years back. So, there's a lot of flattening, and it's really changing. It's changing the industry, and I hope it's going to change it in a good way. As someone who's kind of a bit jaded with the where superheroes are at,
yeah,
I want to see, you know, different genres, pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the indie shows that I have gone to this year have had, you know, bigger numbers, which is interesting to me. And again, I think it's sort of overflow when you go to the bigger shows and it's packed with people who, you know, a large percent of them, it's their first comic convention. Makes me wonder if the people that are going to these shows, who are really there looking for comics, and by the comics, I mean creator-owned comics, not like a dollar bin, like old comics, but like, you know, if they're not going to these larger shows, like this is ridiculous, like dealing with the crowds of people and the cost, and why not go and see, some other people who are doing their own books, creator-owned style, and go to the smaller shows and not have to fight the crowds and not have to pay, you know, whatever $30+ to get in. And, that's assuming that you're not going there for, whatever William Shatner's autograph, I don't know. but the people who are truly comic book fans, you know, maybe they're spreading out to the point where, like, you know, they don't want to deal with that. I'll just go to this show down the street or whatever, and not have to fight the crowds, and not have to put up with that, and still get some quality books, you know.
Well, and certainly it's the, I mean, we're seeing access to small press in a way that we never had before. You know, even in the early days of comic stores, when every comic store got every comic that came out, you know, those days seem far distant now, for sure. But, you know, there was a time when like, you know, stores ordered, you know, almost everything out of the order form.
Right.
But the access right now, you've got a couple of books out, so, and you have them on Graphically, correct?
Yeah. And I'm actually, everything is submitted to Comixology, and I have a couple of them approved, and I'm working with them to get them approved in order, because for some reason they approved, like, number 5 and number 6 of Binary Gray, and I'm like, well, that's great, but... maybe we could do them in order. That would be cool too. So I'm waiting on that. But yeah, I mean, this is my third year. I have 14 books to this point, and to have them all in Comixology is something that I've been waiting for a while. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And I sell everything through my own website also, either you know, digital or print. It's, like I said, it's kind of a one-man show here, outside of the anything that has to do with artwork, because I just can't do that. But I try to make everything available in every capacity through my site and here. I'm in Cincinnati, Ohio, locally through the stores in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky.
What made you say money where my mouth is and start printing comics?
Well, that's a great question. I was in a band for a very long time, and I started writing comics probably around 12 years ago. Wrote my first script, sent it to Top Shelf, and I talked to Chris Staros, and who is an amazing guy. At that time, the band stuff really started to take off, so I put it on the back burner. The band stuff ended a few years ago. I took a year off and just started to go a little stir crazy without that outlet. And I was like, you know, I'm gonna jump back over to this and just see what happens. So I wrote Binary Gray, all 12 issues over 6 months, and started, you know, going to shows, looking for artists, really leaning on the people who were already doing that, self-publishing. I had no idea what I was getting myself into and what it took from a level of work, not just writing, but I mean the whole business side of it is something that I had just never anticipated. And I just kind of roll with it, honestly. Found an artist, colorist, letterer, and I was like, well, let's see what happens. I don't know. I guess in that process, just kind of fell in love with the whole thing. I mean, I made a lot of really stupid mistakes, which I think is like probably kind of normal and also kind of great. You know, I mean, I know I sent my first issue to the printer. And they're like, yeah, all these pages, they should be divisible by 4 for the printing. And I was like, oh, you know, that makes a lot of sense. It makes a whole lot of sense. So I had to like scramble to come up with, you know, a couple of filler pages for the back of the first couple issues of Binary Gray. And, you know, it's just that type of stuff that like you don't think about going into it, you know. And you know, just as like a sidebar, so many people really came to my aid and helped me out getting started that I always tell anybody who comes to my table, like, hey, if you have any questions, if you need any help, like getting your own book going, like absolutely drop me a line. It's just that that kind of vibe. Like, that's the vibe that you get when you go to the shows and you see and you meet, you know, the same people at all these different shows. It's really like a strange family vibe, which I just didn't see coming at all. But anyway, yeah, so I just kind of fell in love with the whole thing. I mean, I grew up with comics. I always loved comics. But there's an intense satisfaction of putting your own book together, which I didn't expect.
Wow, that was a really great answer. I can't wait to hear the question. Sorry, folks, I had to drop off the call for a while.
Thank you for joining us.
Had a little bit of a power problem here. My router went out. Sorry.
Of course, I wonder. I texted to say iPad, not realizing, of course, that the router would be out too, and you have no internet.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Like, one piece.
I was gonna say that, you know, because I'm an IT guy, and I was thinking, like, you know, his iPad's probably not gonna work if his power's out. But I didn't.
Oh, single. What are the? There's a phrase for that, a single point of failure. Is that?
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So I hope at least you had an even number of pages in your first book. Not
no blank pages. No blank pages.
I don't know how many times as I've worked on design stuff over the years, I've had to explain that no, we can't put in two extra pages. the brochure cannot have one extra page for an order form. It just doesn't. I have a curious question because of something else I've been working on, Charles.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen the physical form of your book. Yeah, I read the PDFs that you sent me,
mm-hmm.
which I greatly enjoyed. I'm looking forward to reading some more of your work. What did you choose for paper stock?
Oh geez!
Did you look at?
We're gonna go there. So here's the thing. I know certain printers give you the option to choose your different paper stock for interior and your covers and stuff. Going through Comics Wellspring, who I've printed everything through to this point. They don't really give you that option. There's no option, which for me worked out great because if somebody had thrown that in my face, I would have been like, ah, geez, I don't know. And I probably would have picked the wrong thing and regretted it. So the answer to your question is, I don't know. I have no idea.
I've picked my way through, do you want a 60-pound stock or an 80-pound stock?
Yeah.
Very serious look at my face while I went. I think we're going with the 80.
Yeah. Now, I could be wrong because I'm usually wrong about things, but I think that it's an 80-pound stock interior, and then the cover is higher than that. but I mean, not to say anything bad about Comics Wellspring, all of the books turned out great. I've never had a complaint or a problem about the books. I mean, they're very heavy quality, as opposed to like what you get from DC Marvel. I think they're definitely heavier than that. Yeah, weights. I don't know, man. He's talking to the wrong guy.
A lot of small press has gone to, I mean, DC and Marvel have, like, that stuff's tissue paper thin now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have a trade paperback of Binary Code. Is that print as well, or is that?
Binary Gray!
Someday I'll get that, right?
That's okay. Yeah. People say Binary Gary and all kinds of stuff.
Binary Gary, that's a great title.
I know, I wish I had thought of that.
Follow it up with that. I like that.
But is there a physical trade as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, it's the first six issues. And issue 7 is coming out. I have to remember stuff. I think July 30th. Yep. And then the 8th issue is coming out August 20th. The 9th issue is being colored right now.
Now, when
it is moving right along.
When I first contacted you, you said you might be actually making the jump to Comixology. We can edit it out if question out if just it's a problem. But
we just did that.
Just did that. Sorry, I'm.
We'll edit out that you missed when we got.
Can't wait to listen to this episode. Fair. Okay.
Mother Nature ruining our editor's day.
Yeah, it's on the way. Comixology is on the way.
It'll be counting down for a second. it's like Memento. You've gotta read the comic backwards.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, I've always used the word. I don't use the word independent and small press interchangeably, and some do, because I always think of independent as, are you your editor's boss or is the editor your boss? That's kind of the defining line for me. Is the editor there as the person helping you, or is he the one, or is he or she the one giving you direction?
Right.
Like it's that control piece is always where I kind of make the line. And I mean, small press is naturally, independent, but not all independent is small press.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Thank you. It's like problem solved, Chris.
Next topic.
We've already wrapped it up. You go back to talking about Planet of the Apes now?
Now, what books are inspiring you right now? Maybe something small press.
We talked about that. No, we didn't talk about that. We didn't talk about that. Keep going.
That's interesting because, I hate to say that, I have a huge stack of comics, that I haven't had a chance to read through yet. So, I would just say the last thing that I read, was Tiger Lawyer, by Ryan Ferrier. I don't know if you're familiar with
good
that.
Good friend of the show. Really good friend of the show.
It's awesome.
Local guy, actually, yeah.
We walk around conventions quite often saying, he's a tiger, and he's a lawyer.
First of all, Ferrier is amazing. Dave is outstanding. Tiger Lawyer is obviously really kick ass. It's just, you know, but as far as independent stuff, like that's kind of the stuff that I've been reading. It's interesting because I don't know that that's like a direct influence because a lot of my stuff is darker, but that's the stuff that I'd love to read, you know? I'm trying to think. Seriously, like I'm sort of out of touch with comics. I hate to say that, but
no, I'm just trying to figure out how we can get some money out of Ferrier because we mentioned him so much. I mean Keith is absolutely the Dave fanatic. I thought his Twitter feed was going to break when the first issue came out.
I actually changed my name on Twitter to substitute all of the vowels for the numbers.
Yes. Yeah. I think. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that's what that book does to you. It makes you just, you know, kind of bow down and be like, yes, this is the shit. I've been kind of in kind of a writing phase lately, and when I'm in a writing phase, I don't read a lot, and so. So I'm a little out of touch with shit. I haven't picked up a lot of stuff, but you know, not necessarily for the writing. I've been reading the new Ghostwriter primarily for Chad Moore's artwork, honestly. Not that the writing is bad, but that artwork, man. I look at it and I'm just like, holy shit. You know, I don't know. God, I'm like really like racking my brain now to think of like things that I've read recently. And I'm kind of coming up with nothing. I watch a lot of movies, honestly. I'm probably a bigger movie guy than I am, a comics guy, which is ridiculous because I have like 4,000 comic books. So that sounds really stupid, but, I have, you know, boxes and boxes stacked, but, I think in, you know, visually, more than I do, when I'm writing, you know, it's not necessarily, God, I don't even know what the fuck I'm saying anymore. It's not like I read comic books to inspire me. I mean, occasionally there are those books out there that are like, holy shit, you know, just kind of blow you away and you have to step back from them. But I've been so far removed from that. And again, I had to like move my piles of comic books that I haven't read into like boxes because it just became too much to deal with. Depending on, you know, whatever I'm writing, like I like to, research as much as I can. And most of that research is watching movies, in whatever genre that I'm writing. And, you know, taking careful notes of, you know, whatever cliches, whatever things have been done, and trying to find ways to make that different or turn it on its head and kind of make it my own. I hate to say that because I have stacks of comic books, but I'm kind of more of a movie guy, especially when it comes to researching and inspiration for the stuff that I'm working on.
That actually leads into sort of I was reading Black of Heart, and I was getting definitely noir tone. Well, it is a noir comic book, but I also saw some stuff from now I'm blanking on movie names. Robert Mitchum. Never mind.
Cape Fear?
No. Okay. Old school noir.
Say Robert Mitchum, that's what I think of, Cape Fear.
Okay. I was thinking, no, gone. Sorry.
It's gone.
Actually, and it wasn't even Robert Mitchum, it was the Dick Powell, Philip Marlowe,
Oh, like The Big Sleep?
Yeah, The Big Sleep, that's it.
It's a great movie.
I was seeing
Maltese Falcon, or
yeah, it doesn't matter. I'm just wondering whether you gave your artist specific movie references, because I actually got the visual sense more than from the narrative of noir. Was that on your instruction, or did he bring that to the table?
Well, David's an interesting artist to work with. We started doing the Binary Gray covers together, and then we did a 5-page in Sleepless. And when Black of Heart came up, I was like, you know, what do you think? It's going to be 5 issues. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And I think his art adds a whole lot to the tone of the book. I couldn't imagine a different artist, you know, on that book. But, you know, I never really gave him any cues. I do cast the story myself when I'm writing something. I think of it like a movie, and I cast it in my brain. I don't remember giving him any specific people, but you know, that was 2 years ago.
just to redeem myself a small bit, Murder My Sweet was the movie I was going for. But
oh, okay.
that.
I'm not familiar with that, but I am I'm a big noir fan, and the whole if I can, if you don't mind, I tell this story because I like to tell this story. The story of how the whole thing kind of came together, besides me being like a big film noir fan, was this cab ride that I was taking, and this guy driving this cab was just like kind of twitching and acting like very strangely. I mean, really strange. And in my brain, you know, you get that like intuition, like something's not right here. That's exactly what was going on. And it just occurred to me in that moment how easy it would be for someone to make their car look like a cab. You know, you get a little meter on your dash or whatever. And that was sort of like the beginning of the story. And that villain, it just seemed so simple, you know, I feel like anybody could kind of relate to that kind of evil. It's very easy to take advantage of that situation, especially late at night in a city. And you're dealing with people who are probably needing a cab because they're too drunk to get home. And they're not paying attention to the little details. Anyway, now, that's my story.
Whose idea was the color pops in the book?
I think it was really kind of both of our ideas. I think I had mentioned it, but Dave, really took it to the next level. Because I wanted it to have that black and white noir vibe, but I wanted, you know, kind of pops of color, like you said. And he was like, well, what if it increased as, you know, like the mystery kind of unfolded throughout the issues? And I was like, wow, that's really awesome. So I'll give him total credit for that. But yeah, that's kind of the whole thing, is it starts with primary colors. And then, you know, as the story unfolds, you get more and more color. And so the idea is that by the end of the fifth issue, the big finale is full color. And you know, I get a hell of a response from it.
Now, just out of curiosity, from what you've said, your Kickstarter for this book was very successful.
Mm-hmm.
Why with your next book did you not follow it up with a Kickstarter? It sounds like a viable printing method to me.
No, you're right. That's, I guess I just didn't want to be that guy, you know. I hate to say that, because there's just so many Kickstarters that when I do one, I really want it to mean something, and I want people to be, you know, on board with it. It's also a hell of a lot of work, which I didn't really anticipate. You know, people want updates and stuff like that all the time, and I'm like, it's kind of a hassle. I don't know if I really want to, like, send out an update. Some people send updates every day, and that's too much to me. You know, I've backed Kickstarters where I'm getting emails every day, and they just get deleted.
I truly hate those. And you have to read each one because they might – I'm a digital collector primarily – so I have to check each email because they might be sending me something.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I just, you know, it's like the newsletter on the Assailant site, you know, like I do once a month now, because I don't even want to do it once a month. It's just like, there's so much stuff going on. Like I said, it's sort of a one man show over here. I mean, I'm handling the upkeep of the website, all of the social media stuff, the business side of everything, conventions, traveling, and then, I have to write new books so that there's something to even talk about. And that's, like, very low on my list of priorities. So, yeah, I have to send out, like, this, you know, once-a-month newsletter. And it's the same thing with the Kickstarter. It's like, oh, well, I guess I'll rehash this information, and here's an update, you know, and... I don't want to be annoying to anyone ever. So, I just try to keep it, you know, simple. But there will be more Kickstarters. I can assure you that. I've gotten to the point now kind of where I'm looking at the single issues and the whole printing situation and money, and the lack of money that I have. And I really think that going forward, I'm probably going to release one or two issues of each new miniseries that I do, and then do a Kickstarter for the trade. Because what I'm going to end up with is, you know, 500 copies of issues 4, 5, and 6 or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like eventually people will buy the hell out of the first issue of something to see if they like it. But if they don't like it, then what am I? I'm stuck with a bunch of issues that I can't do anything with. Or, you know, the trade, right? And the trades just sell better. So I'm kind of at the point now looking at the money that I'm investing in this. And I'm thinking, why not do, you know, a couple issues and then do the trade? Because everything that I'm writing now is essentially a mini series anyway, aside from the Open Tree one shots, which is a totally different perspective on that. But I mean, it just makes sense, I think, from a business perspective. But again, you know, what do I know? I'm doing this for the first time, so.
I actually think your business plan makes a lot of sense there. It just sort of reminded me how Oni released Downset Fight. It was originally a OGN, but they released it first in 1, 2, 3, 4 digitally, and then they came out with the full trade.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, that saves a lot of money. Printing is expensive. It's very expensive.
Now, you could have covered this earlier because you did talk Comicology, but I was a little bit I personally don't. I have way too many PDFs. way too many. Just storage space is a nightmare. Right. And in prepping for this, I thought I'm going to try to buy a couple more of his books. Did a little search on the internet and found a link. And this could be just a Google mistake. Your books were listed on the Cloud 9 app, but they don't seem to be there anymore.
Yep, I was working with them for a while, and it's a long story. When I was printing through, Comics Wellspring, and they were kind of partnered with What the Flux Comics, and you know. The guy who was working there, you know, really liked the books that I was doing and kind of wanted to co-publish the books. And so we, you know, kind of went with that. And at the time, you know, we were talking about Comixology and we were talking about this and that. And I was doing Cloud 9 just on my own. And gosh, I don't know.
we don't want to get you in trouble. I'm just curious. Anytime I can get cloud storage, it's a good thing.
Yeah, no. But yeah, basically the co-publishing thing with What the Flux Comics essentially led to not working with Cloud 9 anymore. But yeah, I think the first 3 issues of Binary Gray were on there, but I think that was it.
Keith, what are you doing with your toys?
What'd I do?
Never mind. I lost the video. I got your little picture there. I thought.
Oh. I was having some bandwidth issues, so I shut off the video. We don't have all of us anyway. It's been a tech challenged evening.
Yeah.
Oh, between the power in my mind tonight. Okay.
All Oh man, my brain is quite fried. What movies did you did you look at for the last couple of books you've been working on?
Oh geez, well I don't want to give too much away because The Weight of Air is a 4-issue miniseries that has such a big ending that I don't want to spoil it. And if I said this movie or that movie, then you might have like an idea of where I'm going with it. So I don't want that.
Air is not the name of his sled, is it?
I'm sorry?
Air isn't the name of the sled.
No, no.
It's the Sixth Sense, man. They're dead all the long.
The story I'm working on now is called Absent Stars, and it's really the first sci-fi story that I've done, and I'm having a lot of fun with it and a little bit of frustration with it, but I've been watching like Taxi Driver. It's really like an interesting like Taxi Driver kind of meets Sunshine story. It's not your traditional, nothing I do is your traditional anything. It's not your traditional, sci-fi story. It really is sort of, actually is probably one of the most kind of abstract things that I've written, which has been a lot of fun for me. I'm really kind of interested to see what the reaction will be to it. Because like I said, it's really going to challenge the reader probably more than anything that I've written so far.
Apropos just of Taxi Driver, you've watched it a bunch of times. Do you think Taxi Driver is literal, or is it all in his head? Like, is what you're seeing on screen what's really happening, or is it through the lens of his breakdown?
Well, that's a good question. I guess I always assumed it was literal. I mean, but you know, I never really thought about that before.
I heard the theory, like I always thought.
Why are you breaking my brain?
I was thought it was literal too, but I read this theory recently that you know, everything from a certain point in the movie is like he has a break with he basically has a psychotic break, and things stop being literal. That and then basically the climax of the film is completely an invention of his mind, because it is like everything happens the way he would want it to happen from the, like, uh-huh. As it gets closer to the end, mm-hmm. It becomes more and more idealized that he is the great hero that, you know, that he wants to be at the very beginning.
Well, that's interesting, but I don't like it as much as the fact that he tried to, you know, basically tried to, well, he killed these people, right? And would have killed himself if he had the option. I think I like that more, that he was a hero just by accident, just because the media spun it that way, you know? I think that's a little more fun and a little more interesting, just for me personally.
Yeah, I'll just weigh in quick. Paul Schrader, who wrote the film, I'm familiar with the rest of his work, and that interpretation, Keith, actually works. Works with the rest of Paul Schrader's movies. I think maybe the script could be considered more metaphysical, but once it's translated by Scorsese, it might be literal. I think the literal is what the movie is, but I'd actually be interested in actually going back and reading the script and trying to apply that theory to it.
Yeah, definitely. You guys are screwing up my script that I'm writing right now, man. What are you doing? Why would you do that to me? I don't understand.
If you like pages 1 through 12, this is right before I did We Talk Comics, and I'd like to apologize for everything you have. It's just a panel of Chris and I, as the entire story, train wrecks. And there's a narration box to explain that everything in the book is literal.
Right. This is all true.
I just watched Life of Pi, which doesn't help anything as far as the what.
I love Life of Pi.
So there's only the second time I watched it. I watched it in the theater, and I would say the most 3D has added to a film since Avatar, in which and for Avatar it added the whole film.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. The 3D in that is absolutely beautiful.
What was that, Chris?
The 3D in that. Oh, sorry.
Chris. I've got bad audio from this.
Sorry.
That's okay. Other Chris.
No, I was just asking because I've been actually avoiding that movie on the basis I read the book, loved the book, and I don't know how you can make the really crux of the film work in animation, so I've been avoiding the movie. I love the book. I don't know how the movie could be any better, so I avoided it.
And I haven't read the book, so I don't know how you make the book. I don't know how you make the crux of the movie work in the book.
Yeah, I haven't read the book either. And here's a big secret: I can't read.
Oh. Just he has someone transcribe all.
Which makes the fact that you write comic books really phenomenal.
It's mysterious, right?
It's either inspiring confirmation of 80 years of critical thought of. it's like he doesn't know how to read.
Yeah, no, that'll be my big claim to fame. Besides being the bad boy of comics, which is something I'm really still working on. I got to get in more fights, but. he can't read. I heard he can't read.
Well, you certainly swear a whole lot less than Frank Chow.
Oh, well, that's good. I guess. Is it good? Wait a minute.
But it depends on which. Well, it's not helping the bad boy thing at all.
No, you're right. Oh, fuck. How's that?
Flip over a table or something. punch out a guy who, the next person that makes the Charlton Bullseye joke. Punch him right out.
Oh man, that's never happened. Nobody even knows about Charlton Comics.
Well, now I feel both sad and ridiculous.
I know. I wish I had that problem. The next person who compliments one of my books at a show, I'll just punch them. Like, this book is crap. What are you talking about? Knock them out.
That's what I call the Mike Mignola technique. There, I told that story on the show before that exact thing. Well, he didn't take a swing at me, but certainly it was, the attitude was pretty close because I complimented the book that he was not happy that he had worked on. Not a pleasant memory for him. It was a pleasant memory for me, though. I got to hear how terrible it was to work on. So yeah, take a swing. Next time When they say I really enjoyed Binary Gray, you're like, I hated working on that book. The first moments of my life, and damn you for bringing it up.
At least
that'll be $4.
$4. Signatures free. Purchase of book. Neil Adams method. there's a dude that's cashing in on the convention circuit these days.
Yeah, he's got like 8 tables, man. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh yeah, he's at every con I go to now, and he's always got this giant space, and you can buy his Muhammad Ali Superman for $47, but autographs free. Free with purchase.
Right.
It's twice cover price, but purchase. And then they don't tell you how much a commission will be until you commit to it, and then it's like $200. Mm-hmm.
No, I don't have that problem. Well, I guess I could have that problem, but people would not be satisfied with my commissions.
I think you do, like, do very, very inexpensive commissions. Just so, like, you know, they could be terrible. And the busiest guy I saw at Wizard World Chicago doing commissions was doing commissions for, like, it was $2. They were about the size of, like, a bubblegum card.
Yeah.
And and he had a lineup. Like, he had this long list he had to do.
See, that's not right. I think if you've got if you're going to do a commission, something like that, make it like an odd price, like $1.57. That's memorable to me. You know, you got to make change. Does anybody have change for a nickel? No. There's this guy. He worked with a friend of mine, Russell Ehrig, on this amazing book, and he does. He does these little sketches, and it's called Superhero Sketches. Amazing but terrible, like, little sketches that are, like, all wrong, but, like, great in the same way. Oh, my God. You gotta – it's on my Facebook. You gotta check it out. They're the best. Like, seriously, they're the best. I wanted to buy all of them, but I couldn't afford them.
Scott Shaw was my new favorite commission, where I commissioned something, and then the next day he had drawn more than I commissioned, and he just charged me for the, like, bigger image.
That happened to Brett, too, at that
both
show.
Us, both of us, we asked for just, like, Head and Shoulders, which was, like, you know, $25 or 30. I think it was, like, $30 for, like, Head and Shoulders. Get back the next day, he's done a full figure, and he's like, where's my $50? Like, that is awesome.
See, that's a good business plan right there. That's just business.
No, he made it up by ripping me off. Because I love Yankee Doodle Poodle. He just pulled one out of his portfolio and gave it to me.
Oh, man. See, you're getting all these great ideas for conventions.
I know.
So what you do is when you pitch someone on the book, you tell them, it's like, okay, it's $4. Here's what it's about. And they're like, that sounds great. And they're like, okay, that's great. That'll be $6.
Right.
Now that you really want it.
I'm going to need $2 more from you. Already got their money in your hand. That's $2 more. But I'll sign it for free. This is good stuff. I'm glad. I'm glad this is happening.
I hope you're taking notes on this.
Notes. You don't even know.
All the ways people have screwed us at Comic Con. Oh, man. Well, what...
From what I saw on Twitter, you do conventions quite often, or whenever you have a chance. Does David go with you, or... I don't know why I keep going back to Black of Heart.
We did a couple last year. I think he's coming in for the Cincinnati show this year, but no, he lives in Philadelphia. I live in Cincinnati. And so it's, you know, obviously a pretty good distance apart, and we're both busy with our day jobs, so it doesn't happen as often as I'd like. But he's an awesome guy. He's a lot of fun to hang out with, and I wish we could do it more, honestly. That would be awesome, man. I wish that we could. I wish that we could do more shows together. We did, what did we do? We did New York, and we did Mid-Ohio, the Wizard show, last year together. And they were both really awesome. And you don't understand, because he doesn't really get, like, how much people love this book. And so he's also, like, the most modest, like, guy that I've ever met. And he's just, you know, I'm like, dude, you got to come to the show, man, and see, like, the reaction from people. And I think it, like, finally kind of hit home with him, like, at Wizard World especially, like, nobody – you know, a lot of the people that were there, you know, obviously they don't know who we are, right? But they would come up and see his work, and they're like, oh my God, this is awesome. Did you do this? And which I get all the time because he's never at the shows, right? And I'm like, no, I didn't. I didn't do it, but I wrote it. So, you know, it wouldn't exist if I hadn't written it, right? Then they just walk away like, oh. And so sad. But you know, I think it was really important. So. Yeah, no, right? Not even a tracer. A type. I just type stuff.
Did you at least letter it? Did you letter it?
Yeah, right.
Do something on the book?
No, I didn't do that. I'm standing here at the table. No, but I think it was really awesome to see, like, the reaction from him, to see people coming up and, like, responding to his artwork, you know, because he just doesn't get that. Because I don't think he does shows. So the shows that we've done together, you know, it's been really cool to see him be like, oh, wow, that's really cool. You know, people walk up and they see it and they're like, wow, this is awesome. And, you know, he just doesn't get that. So it was really super cool to see him, like, people appreciating his work, you know.
Assailant Comics, where did that come from? Did you pick Assailant just because it's a cool word?
Absolutely. I think it sounds really cool. I've been in, I was in band for a long time, and I was sitting around one day, and I was thinking, like, The Assailants, that's a pretty cool band name. And then so when I kind of moved to the comics, I was like, Assailant Comics, that's pretty cool, you know? And I knew, because I know me, that I would be writing dark stuff, you know? So it just seemed like a good fit. And yeah, it's pretty much as simple as that.
Well, we're not doing reviews this week. But is there any kind of current stuff we want to talk about? What's rocking everyone's world?
I'm surprised we didn't mention it in the news, but I've heard Scott McCloud has announced a new book with Boom. Sculptor. Of course, you'll know Scott McCloud from Understanding Comics. He's been out of the industry for 6 years. Him coming back to me had me, I want to say, all of Twitter, but I didn't go on Twitter.
No, that's really cool. I'm actually looking at his books right now on my shelf. That's pretty awesome.
Of course, it's going to be a fiction book. It's not going to be a Understand Comics or a how to.
What do you do after?
But on the other hand, I mean, Zot was one of my favorite comics of all time, so it should be really interesting. I can't wait to see what he does on a return.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be interesting to see, where he comes back to, like what he. He's experimented a lot the last few things he's done, like oversized books and much more experimental work. The kind of large scale graphic novel, that kind of stuff, as opposed to, traditional floppy. So it'll be, interesting where he goes. There's always a lot of attention when someone who is, as dominant a voice in comics as Scott McCloud is, and sometimes it's great and sometimes it's like Frank Miller, where they come back and you're like, really, that's what you came back for? that was the story that needed telling.
Oh, we're not going to get into Holy Terror once again, are we?
Holy Terror.
was the Xerxes trade paperback actually ever published?
No, Xerxes has never been published. Okay. There's a short story in a Dark Horse Comics Presents, and I think they made it as far as like a 5-page preview or something, but nothing else has ever come out.
Yet the movie still came out, but that's okay. The
movie did come out. I enjoyed the film.
I enjoyed the film as well.
But, I didn't see it.
I thought it has probably the, like, I watched it not long after I'd seen Ben-Hur, and to watch a big part of the 300 prequel is a sea battle, a ship-to-ship battle, which I've never seen anything on screen for a ship battle the way this was done. It was really, really cool. That was easily the best part of the film for me. Like, I mean, it's as cheesy as, much cheesier than the original 300 as far as some of the stuff goes, but visually just really, really stunning.
Was it all in slow motion, like the trailer?
Not all.
Sorry. I couldn't help but be a dick about that.
Was it The Immortals? The Immortals was the one that came out not long after 300 with Brett and Colby.
Yeah, right.
Which, it had some good bits, but I figured it was probably 45 minutes shorter if all the slow motion stuff was just in regular motion. It's probably like an hour 15 if everything was just in normal.
That's a good idea. I'm going to start writing my comics in slow motion and just see how that goes.
Well, here's a tip for you. This is an obscure bit of knowledge from the Marvel Superheroes role-playing game. It doesn't get much more canonical than the Marvel Superheroes role-playing game. There was a bit in it where they're explaining how to play the game and how the rules work, and they said there are 10 turns of gameplay per 1 minute of what's really what's happening in the real world of the game, because in comic books, the space between two panels is 6 seconds.
What? That's an average, or
that was what they maintained, is that there is 6 seconds between two consecutive panels. If assuming it doesn't go to a meanwhile or something, but if it's just an ongoing panel, there's 6 seconds between each panel.
Now, I don't know what's more appalling, that I find that kind of interesting, or the fact that you've read the Marvel Superheroes game handbook recently enough to quote it.
Oh, no, I have an encyclopedic knowledge of things that I'll never need again. The more valuable, the less likely it is that it will be stored in my brain. I have no practical skills. I'd like to point that out. No practical skills whatsoever. But I do know.
Yeah.
let me tell you a sad story about, now I don't know if this is the same one that you're talking about, but the old school Marvel role-playing games that you bought in like a box at like whatever bookstore. I had two of them. I'm an only child. No one to play with. I thought, maybe there would be like some cool like figurines or something. You get like a little cardboard figure of like Wolverine. You can put in like a little plastic stand up thing. None of that happened.
It was a little trifold.
All I got was a big fold out map of New York City or whatever. Very disappointing as an only child. And that's as far as I got with it, to be honest with you. I laid out the map and I said, this is it. This is it for me. And I folded it back up, put it in the box. End of story.
I will say that I'm not an only child. I made it one more step, which was to play for 1 hour with my younger brother, who then said, I don't like this. And then I folded it, put it back in the box. I feel
really bad. Like, I missed out on the whole Dungeons and Dragons thing. Like, so many people are really into that, and I feel like it would be really fun to like hang out with a bunch of friends and be like, and do that. But that never happened to me.
Actually, a little bit of a true story. I was into Dungeons and Dragons. This is scary. And I was forced to move cities during that period, and I thank God now. Because those
forced?
Friends,
like the city you were in kicked you out?
By my parents.
Oh, okay.
30 or 40 years ago.
It was a whole Monsters thing. It was...
And I lost contact with those friends. I found out 3 years later, those same friends who were playing Dungeons & Dragons decided to move out to the woods and live it for real.
Oh, God.
Oh. Just, yeah, be glad that you missed out on that opportunity.
Sort of business there, and I'm just so glad that I wasn't along for that ride.
I'm just going to text my little brother and thank him for not being interested in Marvel Superheroes role-playing games, so I never moved out to the woods to live Marvel Superheroes role-playing
games. No. You'd move to New York and be a superhero, man. That sounds like an awesome life.
I know, New York's
a completely different thing.
New York's a really expensive city, despite what you see in the Marvel comics. Everyone seems to have jobs where they can leave a lot, a lot of freelance work and consultant work pays them a great deal of money to work irregular hours, and without really complex background checks either.
I think you're picking that up because I've seen friends.
that's true. They often did not have gainful employment and still managed to have two bedroom apartments in Soho. So yeah.
I think evidence is against you, man.
See, now if I had if my peer group was really into friends, then I also would have moved to New York to try to live it for real. And it probably would have worked out just almost the same as the superhero would.
Well, we've kept Charlton up way past his bedtime. He's way out east. We're way out west. We should probably call an end to this. So we'll leave Charlton the end tag so he can sell as many comic books to our listeners as possible. So I'll leave off first. I'm Chris _ WeTalk. Keep listening to WeTalk Comics. We're on iTunes. We're on, of course, Comicosity, our great sponsors. They do put us up on our site. We are on the Comic Book Podcasting Network. Keith, am I missing anything? We got a Facebook page with 3 likes.
Hey, I'm one of.
It just started, Charlton. Don't worry, we've got more listeners than that.
We got like 5.
We just started it like
we had
hours ago almost.
We would have 6, but my dad cannot figure out how to use. and I'm not doing text. I've just pretended I don't know how to use it either. That's the way I get it.
That sounds like me doing tech support for my family. I don't really know.
Yeah. I was so happy when I stopped using a Mac at work, so I stopped getting the phone calls about how does something work on a Mac. I don't know. It's all changed since I worked on one a year ago. That stuff just goes right away. We talk podcasts on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at @CubReporterK. I am working on a piece for Comicosity, that I expect to be a barn burner, and I don't know when it's going to be ready. I have spent the past several years on Twitter hearing from people what is wrong with the comic industry. I have narrowed it down to one thing. That will be coming up in the Read Between Lines column on Comicosity.
It's not Stephanie Brown, is it?
It is not Stephanie Brown, but you can read about why I don't like Stephanie Brown. I don't care about Steph Brown. You can read that.
I was going to say, it's me, isn't it? You can say it. It's cool. It is
the lack of Charlton Comics, but you're bringing up the average. But in name only, if in name only, you can... It's too bad that really that you couldn't make a play for the Charlton trademark. You're like, my name's Charlton. I'm making some comics. You're not your name.
Let me tell you that the first business card I made had my own version of the Charlton logo on it. I'll just say that. I mean, it's a natural thing, right? People see that and be like, oh, Charlton Comics. Let me tell you, no one has ever said that to me, ever. Someone's cat is very angry in the background. I can hear it.
My cat.
A tradition. We've got several cats that occasionally visit the podcast.
Also check my Twitter. because I expect in the next couple of days I will finish assembling my Lego Sandcrawler, which has been a labor of love for several weeks now. The thing is ridiculous. 3,300 pieces.
Wow.
I've paced myself so that I don't zen out. I don't actually enjoy the experience putting the thing together. 3,300 pieces. I've promised, Mr. Beck here that once I get that together, I will, I'm going to be submitting to the Shelf Porn, blog, pictures of my, of the Booster Cave.
And now you don't have an interview to promote that should be about the same time as this podcast?
We have an interview. We have an important interview coming up. We have not recorded it yet, so I don't know when it'll be. It's coming up soon. One of our dream guests, Brett's dream guest, actually, for the show. So Brett and I will be doing this interview. Not my dream guest yet. My dream guest is Dan DiDio, which I have not been able to line up yet. But, you know, well, I mean, if you're going to dream, you might as well dream big.
I mean, it's not me. I'm kind of hurt.
I've checked Charlton right off the list.
It's too late for that, sir.
And when people say, what were your fondest memories? And I say, well, Mike Morici talking about Planet of the Apes. I haven't done that one yet. Dan DiDio, I haven't done that one yet. Scott Snyder, which I have done. And the founder of Charlton Comics, too.
Oh, obviously.
All right, wrap us out here. Finish us up.
Where can we buy your stuff?
My stuff? So primarily on assailantcomics.com. Unless you live in the Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky area, in which case it's in a variety of stores around here. But you can go to assailantcomics.com and you can find the stores that it is available in. And you can request it from your store. Otherwise, yeah, I will send you signed print issues and digital issues direct download. Comixology is coming up shortly. And that's my story.
Now, where can people harass you on Twitter? Or can they harass you on Twitter?
Oh, please harass me on Twitter. It's at Charlton Sect or at Assailant Comics. Either way, you're going to get to me.
I figure you have your assistant take care of the main feed. But.
Well, yeah, of course. There's so many assistants. It's hard to say who you'll get if you contact us, but chances are they'll be a jerk. I don't know what I'm talking about. We're closing in on 1,000 likes on the Assailant Comics Facebook page, so if you're on Facebook, and you probably are, go there and like our page, because it's awesome. That's where we basically tease everything. I'm actually going to put the first four pages of Open Tree number 1 up tomorrow. And go there and check that out. I'm going to actually do the whole book over the next couple weeks. And just want to, you know, kind of get that out there and see what kind of response we get. Like I said, it's totally different from anything that I've done before. And it's getting a hell of a response so far. So definitely want to keep that ball rolling.
Okay, this is We Talk Comics, OUT.